You are tuned in to another edition of Americana Music Profiles, brought to you by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine and AmericanaMusicMagazine.com. I'm your host, Greg Tutwiler. Let's jump right in to the next exciting interview. Michael and Juliet Dinallo both attended Berklee, just not at the same time. They've both had their own musical career and just found each other a little later in life. Now, as the Dinallos, they have their much-anticipated self-titled debut album together, a 16-track collection. They both join me on this edition of Americana Music Profiles as we talk about their new music and their journey to finding each other. I have with me Michael and Juliet on the podcast today. Welcome, guys. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Good to be.
Thanks for having us.
Good to be here.
And you guys are in Massachusetts. We were chatting a few minutes before we got started. How long have you been there? Is that home?
Well, yeah, it is. But we've been kind of back and forth over the past 4 years in Nashville. But we came back. You know, we haven't really been doing too much in Nashville because of COVID.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
So we're back here, and we still go back and forth, but just not as much.
Okay. So that's kind of a regular commute then for you guys.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We love it, but it's just not. It's so, you know, we've got Annabelle, who's 10, and she's not vaccinated yet, so we're not ready to
yet
sure. until she gets her.
Yeah.
It's a long commute.
It is, yeah. It's a long commute from Virginia, so I can imagine. Yeah, okay. Do you have residence there? Or just...
Rush hour sucks.
Yeah.
We did have a residence. We actually had an apartment for the past 3 years, but we gave it up in September because it just didn't make any sense.
Right.
You know, to hold on to rent, and it was great. It was right in East Nashville, right, like maybe a mile and a half from downtown.
Oh, yeah, okay.
On the east side, which is a really cool, East Nashville is really, it's
it
fun,
is.
It's really good.
Yeah.
It's where all the musicians hang out and live.
Right,
and
yeah, yeah.
Nobody has a draw. Everybody's from somewhere else.
So you guys have been together how long?
We've been together about 11 and a half years, but married 10.
Okay. And did I read correctly, you guys met in school? Or no?
No.
Okay.
No, we both went to Berklee, but at different times.
Okay, that's where I got that from. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, we met in the clubs in Boston.
Okay. And been playing together ever since. You guys had a musical journey of your own then, outside of being together.
Yeah, Michael's been in the business a lot longer than I have. Right after Berklee, I got married to my first husband, and I didn't do any music for almost a good 10 years.
Okay.
And, yeah, you know, I mean, I was in a bad day. It was just not a good place, you know. And when I came out of the marriage, and then I spent a lot of time by myself, that's when I started getting back into music, and I just started writing. Boom. Who knew? And then all I started writing these songs, and they were really, really good. You know, everybody told me they were really good. And most of them were co-writes at first, but then I just started, it just exploded. And my first record was released. It was recorded, we started it in 2005, and then, you know, finally got out and released by 2013. And that was No Regrets.
Yeah.
And I just haven't stopped writing since. So I was a little bit of a late bloomer, but knew I wanted to be in music, and then just took a sabbatical and, you know, floundered. I think a lot of us do in our 20s, you know.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, trying to figure it all out.
Well, yeah, I'm just, you know, trying to get the courage to really do it,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But being alone is, like, the best thing, and I always like to say that to, you know, young women who feel like they need to settle down. It's like, no, live your dreams.
Yeah, right.
Don't think you were too young, seriously, because the best thing I did was to spend time, you know, a good 5 years by myself and just, you know, working and writing songs.
Sure.
Awesome.
Yeah. It's hard to do that when you're, regardless of the situation, when you're with someone else, it's hard to take a good hard look at yourself and figure out who it is you want to be.
For sure, because there's a lot of distractions, you know, and
right.
sometimes that's the reason why you jump into it.
Yeah.
You don't realize it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But my Michael's journey in the music started way before me, and he was a lot more, I'll let him tell, but, you know, but that's where it started for me.
Yeah.
For the most part.
So Michael, you were involved in a lot of things early on, right, in your career?
Yeah, I grew up outside of Cleveland. I started playing in bar bands when I was about 15 or 16.
Oh, cool.
And then I moved to Boston and when I was 18 to go to Berkeley, and I never went back to Ohio. And then I guess I started on the road in about 1998 or 89, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, just been there ever since.
and
a lot of different bands and produced a lot of different records.
Okay.
Spent a lot of time in Europe and, you know.
You produced a guy in Europe who was a pretty good pop star over in Norway. Is it Norway?
Yeah.
And William Hutt. And he got some recognition for that, mm-hmm. which is really good.
Yeah.
That's a gold record?
Yeah, gold and platinum records.
Yeah.
A couple number one singles.
That's awesome. Yeah. So
produced Eddie Floyd's comeback record to Sax. Yeah, a lot of cool things.
So you guys met, I think you said, about 11 years ago. Did you start out playing music, or is that something that came along?
Well, after? it's a little bit more interesting than that, and I'll go way back. When I was married to my first husband's best friend ended up being Mike's roommate at Berkeley.
Oh, really? Okay.
So it was all these degrees of separation, right?
Yeah.
And so I knew this guy really well. And I worked at a place in Marblehead, as I say, I'm going to say it properly Marblehead, but they call it Marblehead, you know.
Uh-huh.
And it was a place that had blues bands. And Mike used to play there all the time. And I remember seeing the Radio Kings listed, you know, and I would work, you know, sometimes the bar or, you know, waitress and or cocktail at the end of the night. And, you know, we were in the same place at the same time, but we don't remember each other.
Mm.
And that was, you know, years ago, years and years and years ago. And, you know, as we got to know each other, we started playing in the same, you know, clubs in Cambridge and Somerville. And there was a lot of clubs there that we played, Little Circuit. And I, you know, I was playing with Juliet. Actually, it was Dig in the Dirt was the name of my first band. And then Mike started playing with me more, and I stopped working with the guy I was writing with because he just didn't have a lot of time. And so I changed the band name to Juliet and the Lonesome Romeos. And, you know, and then we started playing together more, and, you know, we hit it off. But then we'd have these conversations about these places. You know, yeah, I used to hang out at this place called Dodge Street in Salem. I'm like, I was there all the time. We both knew the owner really well.
Wow, that's cool.
It was really weird.
Yeah.
It was really weird.
That's cool.
Yeah. And then, you know, we kind of hit it off. It was, you know, it's been great. Marriage is not easy. Everything's always a challenge.
Sure.
But, you know, we work it out.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's nice to be with somebody who you can work things out with, and we love to write together and support each other, and, you know, it's good.
So the new record that you guys have out, is this your debut record together?
It is.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, we've done work together, but, you know, him as the producer and me as the artist.
Uh-huh.
And my former band. And this is the first time we decided to collaborate like that. And it kind of unfolded on its own. And I was working on an LP, long play, and he was working on a little extended play. And he had like six songs or something like that. And there was one song that I had written that I couldn't figure out how to get right. And I just said, we had initially done it as a bluegrass, and this is the song Lemonade.
Mm, yeah.
And, okay. And it wasn't working. It just wasn't working, and the vocals were just not. It just wasn't working. So we Mike had the idea of making it more like a Johnny Cash train thing, straight train country. And that was really cool. So we redid the basics. You know, a scratch vocal, and then when we were going to go in and do the vocals, I said, well, you know what would be cool is maybe we'll get Annabelle, who's our daughter, to go in and sing, because she's got an incredibly nice voice, really good pitch, beautiful voice.
Cool.
And so she sang like four times through the song, and they were so good, it was so strong, that I was like, all right, she's got the lead to this. And that kind of made us start thinking, maybe we should do like a family album and just condense everything together, you know.
Okay.
He had some songs she was working on that other people sang, and which he could work into a different EP later on.
Yeah.
And it just worked out, you know. It seemed like the right thing to do. And our daughter is getting more comfortable singing, you know, with us and wants to do it. So
yeah, that's neat.
We're going to do another one next year. We're writing away and trying to get some new material. We might throw some covers on there that she likes. And so it's really fun.
Yeah, that sounds fun. That's awesome. Yeah.
We're going to pause for just a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the interview.
I was listening to some of the tracks, and there was this almost a Tex-Mex feel coming through. I don't know if that's just how I heard it or if that was intentional. What were the influences for the music on this record?
I don't know. It was written over a span of a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like some of the songs, like one of the songs, Fine Time of Year, I wrote with one of my friends in Boston, Tim Gear. We wrote that song in 1999.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then I've had some of these instrumental ideas kicking around for, like, the one that closes out the record. I think I've had that idea, you know, 15 years, and there's all kinds of different little things that come into play. And I suppose I could hear where you hear the little bit of Tex-Mex stuff with the accordion.
That's probably it.
There's some bounciness to the song. We've got some really good, you know, players on that record, and it's nice. Nice to play with these guys in Nashville. It really is. It's funny, you know, as time goes on, things become less driven by genres or stylistic changes.
Right.
It's just, I'm the same way. It's just kind of like, that's the way it comes out. Yeah, and we were talking about this after the record was finished back late last fall, and it was When the World Was Mine, we were talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like sometimes when you write a song, the song dictates how it's going to sound.
Hmm.
Yep.
And it doesn't really matter. It kind of like the thing, what you do to it. You know, we've, like, with that song in particular, we used a bunch of different guitars, and we tried different things. We had a piano, and pretty much no matter what we took away or added to it, it had its own constant to it.
Mm-hmm.
Its own sonic constant, I guess that's the word.
Yeah.
A lot of overtones, and, you know, that just happened. It wasn't, like, intentional. The things that Mike did that were more intentional were, you know, trying to manipulate the sound to be more like a 70s, 60s, 70s rock record, you know, like pulling the vocals down instead of having them way up front,
mm-hmm.
you know, more like where the snare drum is. And, you know, so they, you know, like, they were, should we make it like a Jackson Browne sound,
right,
or, you know, something like that? And I was all over all of it. I thought that was really cool. So it does have its kind of own unique sound to it. Some of it was manipulated, but some of it just
kind of
comes out the way it comes out.
Sure, yeah, that's cool. The organic is nice, yeah, yeah.
It's a very guitar-heavy record, probably the most guitar-heavy record I've made in a long, long time.
Okay.
Whether my own record or producing Juliet or producing other people, it's,
mm-hmm.
it's more guitar-centric than a lot of them. Even though it's got other instruments on it, you know, lots of keyboards and
mm-hmm.
steel
mm-hmm.
guitar and fiddles and accordion and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Could great slide guitar on the first Kilimanjaro.
It's just more of a guitar record.
And you guys put a few more songs on there than normal, than what most people put on the record?
Yeah, you know, as a producer, I usually like to keep records for 10 songs, but, you know, when we were combining two records, it was, you know, we weren't going to flip coins to see which one was going to get cut.
Yeah.
So we just, you know, basically what we did was we took the record that Juliet was working on over a couple of years. We added the cover of the Fleetwood Mac song in, and then I took the stuff that I was working on, which was going to be my second EP, and I cut out all the vocal tunes that weren't hers, and we just combined the two records.
Cool. Okay. And it's just out, right? Last month, March?
Yeah, March 26th.
Okay. Have you had a chance to take this music out in its current form out into the public?
Only via streaming.
Yeah.
Yeah, Yeah, we haven't been able to do any live gigs, but we did two live streams with backup singers. So it was Michael, myself, Amber Caceres, who's from Mass, and Anita Suhannon, who sang with me on Dream Girl, those two.
Okay.
And we did a, you know, like an hour set for South by Southwest party through our publicist, and then we did, you know, a CD release party. And they both were really good. I mean, it's nice to have just like the guitar and then three-part harmony. It's really, really nice.
We've got another one of those coming up on May 15th.
May 15th, we're doing another one.
Do you have some plans, long range, to get out in public? Are there things starting to cook? And are you guys going to do that as a duet, or will you take a band out?
Hopefully both.
Hopefully both, yeah.
We spent most of 2019, the end half of 2018, and almost all of 2019 touring on Juliet's Dream Girl record.
Okay.
It was just the two of us in a car, you know, and going around doing radio stations and clubs and wherever they would have us play. We played all over pretty much the eastern part of the country.
Okay.
The Mississippi East. So, we'll get back out there.
I'd like to get back to Nashville and hopefully, you know, do some performances like we did before. And it's probably not going to be till the fall till we really hit it harder.
Right, that's what we're hearing.
But we have 16 tracks to work with, so we can have, you know, we've got two singles out. We could have another couple singles out. You know, we can stretch it out a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, why not?
right, yeah.
Keep it alive as long as we can.
Sure.
And meet them.
We're
planning on doing another one. Hopefully by January we can start recording.
Okay, that was going to be my next question, if you had something else in the works behind it.
Yeah, we're going to keep going with brand, the Dinellos. I mean, our daughter's, you know, she's growing up in it, and I think as long as she wants to do it, and even if she doesn't, we can still do it, Mike and I, and keep that name.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you all have other things that you do, or is, you know, outside, some side projects or that kind of thing?
Well, I do. I have, I had a lot of work, but a lot of it dwindled because of COVID.
Right.
I've been a fitness professional for a long time.
Oh, okay.
So I teach, you know, all sorts of fitness classes.
Sure.
But Jump Sports International is the one that owned Boston Sports Club, and they, you know, they had to lay everybody off, and then they had gotten themselves in a lot of trouble by not refunding people and charging them dues and everything like that. So it's a kind of a big deal. But Town Sports International is big. They have Washington Sports Club, New York Sports Club, Boston Sports Club. I believe the Philadelphia. I can't remember for sure, but anyways, I used to do that, and that I got laid off there, and then I have another business where I'm an agent, agency, and I do aftermarket products for new automobiles.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So I do that part time.
So when did you say the next streaming event was that you guys...
May 15th.
May 15th. Okay.
We don't have a time yet, but it'll be on our Facebook page and our website.
Okay. And a bit of a calendar starting to shape up then, coming up soon to get out?
Yeah, I think so. I think we'll probably be looking at September, really.
Yeah.
Our manager's working on that for us right now. And we'll see what the fall brings and into 2022.
Yeah, it's hard to navigate the COVID because it's so uncertain. I mean, it's looking like it's going to be better, but, you
right.
know.
So unpredictable, you know. Right. I know. Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
You know, and we just want to, I don't really want to travel with my daughter until she's vaccinated. So we're hoping that will happen over the summer.
Yeah, that's good. So this is a self-titled debut, right? The Dinellos?
Yep.
Okay. And out now. Folks want to get in touch with you guys. They want to listen to the music. Maybe reach out and get something on the calendar, or figure out where you guys are going to be. What's the best way to do all of that?
Our website, thedinellos.com.
Yep, we have everything available there. We also have, you know, like we have a little store that has merch. If they're interested, people are interested in merch. We have T-shirts and stuff like that, and but they can access all of the information latest information on the website. And they can get the record on any platform that people stream or buy music on.
Yeah, cool. And that is
Dinallos,
correct?
Yes.
Good.
Dinallos,
yes. Awesome.
Yes.
Well, thank you guys very much. This has been awesome to talk to you and learn about your music, and I certainly hope that you can get out soon. And
yeah, me too.
and share the music with the rest of us out here. It's good stuff. I'm looking forward to it.
I can't wait.
Yeah. well, thanks a bunch. This has been great.
All right. Thanks,
you're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. You have a great day.
Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Americana Music Profiles. Find us on iTunes at Americana Music Profiles and on the internet at AmericanaRhythm.com.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.